What's going on, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. We're on episode 90, and this episode is brought to you by Amazon. So if you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and help us help, I can't even talk today. If you go to that URL, that will help you. Or I can't even talk, man. Anyways, guys, I'm with Derek.
You want to try again?
I can't do the intro. No, we'll leave it on. We'll leave that in there. Let people know that I mess up every once in a while. But if you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and you purchase something that helps the podcast and help us keep on going here. That was the worst intro ever, man.
Yeah, that was like worse than anything I've ever done.
Yeah. I mean, usually Derek's the one that messes up, but I don't know. It is Sunday. It is Super Bowl Sunday here, and neither of us care about football.
So, not a lot.
You know, so. But I do think the Patriots are going to win. I'm pretty sure that's what most people are thinking, so.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and root for Atlanta, though.
Yeah. You don't like the Patriots. A lot of people don't like the Patriots, so.
Yeah, people just don't like the team that just wins everything, right?
Yeah.
You can be cool for a while, but eventually, if you win everything, you're just going to get a bunch of hate, so.
Yeah, so I don't care either way, so.
Yeah, I really don't care, but.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so it'll be a good game to watch, I guess. I'll probably watch it later, so.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've heard people say, it should be interesting in that it should be really high scoring, because it's. Couple of offensive teams.
So. Yes, that should make it really interesting. So yeah. We will I'll watch it. But let's jump right into reviews this week.
Let's do some tech.
Yeah, let's get into the tech here. So three really cool products this week. Two gaming products and one other kind of portable product. We'll start with my favorite product of this past week, which is the Corsair Scimitar Pro RGB gaming mouse. And I honestly thought this thing was like kind of a gimmick. This mouse is designed for MMO and MOBA gamers. It has a ton of buttons on it, and actually has 17 programmable buttons. That's quite a lot for a mouse. And
not a lot for MMO stuff, though.
Not a lot for MMO stuff, but a lot on a mouse just in general.
For sure.
And you know, I've used MMO mice in the past, and they're just clunky and big, and you know, it's hard to press all the buttons fluidly. Really, really hard to press, and like it's just not comfortable to game. And this mouse is extremely comfortable to game with, and I'm not an MMO gamer that much anymore. I mostly play FPS, but this mouse I can press all 17 buttons no problem. They're not hard to get used to. It's very fluid. There's a section on the left side of the mouse that has 12 programmable buttons on it, and those are actually extremely easy to press. And you actually, once you learn it, I can press them without having to look down. Like it's really, really cool. I think this if I'm an MMO gamer, this is the mouse that I want to have.
It looks good to be honest. It looks a lot like the Razer Naga, but that's essentially I think the first company that came out with all those buttons on the side.
Yeah,
it's not like a carbon copy, but like it's very, very similar.
Yeah, I haven't used that mouse, so I can't tell you. But just feel wise, this feels really good. And again, it doesn't feel like overly large, which I think a lot of MMO mice have. That you know, they're really big, and then there's buttons kind of all over the place. Whereas you have almost all of your buttons on, you know, that you actually use with your thumb. And it works really well. It has a 16,000 DPI sensor in there.
That's really fast.
Yeah, and you can actually change it in increments of one. So a lot of them are 100 DPI. You can actually change it in increments of one. So you can really dial it down to what you want. And you can calibrate it to the mousing surface that you're using, which is really good. So you have extremely accurate tracking. It works really well. And of course, it is RGB. You have four different RGB zones that you can change and mess around with all that. And it's all backed up by Corsair's Q software, which actually works extremely well. Really well done software. And you can save up to three profiles on the mouse. So if you take this to a friend's house or you're at a LAN event, all of your macros and all that kind of stuff will all be saved on the mouse. So you don't have to worry about, you know, redoing them every time. So it's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I like it. And it's
how much does it cost?
I think this is $59.
That's not bad.
Sure.
It's pretty standard, right?
$79, sorry.
Oh, that's a little more expensive.
It is, but you know, it It has
any extras or anything with it?
Yeah, so I mean, not extras, but I mean, being able to save profiles on a mouse is a pretty big thing. A lot of mice don't give you that. Keyboards, you see it a lot with keyboards, but yeah. With mice, you don't see it really at all. So you have up to 3 profiles on the mouse. All the different lighting zones. It's really well made too. It's a well made mouse. It's not like something that's super plasticky or something like that. And just the amount of adjustment that you can do, as well as being able to calibrate and things like that, are things you're not going to find with other mice. It's just, it's really that good. And I really don't give out Editor's Choice Awards much. But this really, really is good. Yeah, it is. I'm still using it, and I'm using it, like, I use the buttons on the side for, like, editing in Photoshop and Lightroom, as well as Premiere. It, like, works really, really well.
I mean, I use Naga, and I swear that it's the best FPS mouse ever, because I can do all the weapon switching with the numbers on the side.
Yeah, that's what this is so great. And one thing that's cool is that every other column, or row, or however you want to call it, on the side... every other one is textured, so you
know. Yeah, that's really smart.
Yeah, so you know which button you're pressing. I think that's what makes it so good, because, you know, if I'm not looking, oh, what am I pressing? But I can feel it. It has that tactile feel on it, you know.
Yeah, 1 through 6 is easy. After that, you can kind of lose your finger in the rows.
Yeah.
So having that tactile feel on every other is, it just helps to place it a lot better.
Yeah, and one other thing that's cool is that there is a little light on the side that when you switch DPIs, it will you pick the color, so you know what DPI you're on without having to go to the software. So that's kind of nice as well. So I like it. Again, I'm not an MMO guy, and this will probably be my mouse from now on. So that should tell you just enough right there.
Yeah, cool.
It is really, really good. So definitely check it.
To try that.
Yeah, I was actually, you know, again, not a huge MMO guy, but I mean, this works great in FPS. It works great in other games I play. It's just, you know, kind of replaces everything I would do on the keyboard with macro keys and everything with the buttons on the side. So definitely like it. Yes. So we'll move on to a headset, and this one comes from Rocket, and it is their Ranga, which is sort of a lower cost headset, but it's really specific. At least in my testing, it was super specific. It sounds perfect for FPS. The audio is tuned so great for FPS. You can hear where people are coming from. The sound is just right there. So many headsets, especially gaming headsets, are made for overall sound. They're not made for competitive gaming or something like that. With this, it really is. And it's one of the first headsets that really I could tell. The bass isn't overpowering, which you'll find in so many headsets.
Yeah, most gaming headsets will just blow out the bass.
Yeah, so, and again, when you want that real specific sound, especially, you know, Counter-Strike or a game like that where you need to hear where people are coming from.
Yeah, you almost want the mids and the trebles to really show more.
Yeah, and that's what shows in this headset. So for a competitive gaming headset, I think it hits the nail on the head. I think that if you're looking for an overall headset, you're going to be disappointed, especially when it comes to movies and, you know, music. This isn't going to do it for you. Yeah. But it's a great headset, and it's
well made. Would you say this is more like an audiophile tune? Oh, sorry.
An audiophile headset?
You there?
Or yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, would you say it's more like an audiophile tune, like as in it's really neutral?
It's neutral. It's like, again, I just feel it's really tuned for FPS. It's not, again, no overpowering bass. You can really hear like those footsteps, which was really surprising to me. Playing the exact same map with two different headsets, you could really tell with this headset where somebody was coming from. I think that was huge, you know, but the one thing, that I didn't like about this headset is, this maybe this is just me, but the microphone cannot be taken off, which is kind of a bummer. Especially nowadays with, you know, people using their gaming headsets for so much. Like, I don't want to be, you know, out with this weird thing on my head with a microphone. You know, but it is a rather inexpensive headset. I believe it's like $44.99. So it's not.
No,
that expensive.
That's a really good price, actually.
And one thing I also really liked about this is it's super lightweight. So many of these gaming headsets are really big, and they're just like after hours of use, they just, even with all the cushion and everything, they're not that comfortable. With this, it's super lightweight. The headband is really, really lightweight, and the ear cups are breathable. So for esports, I would say this is a great headset. Anything else, I really couldn't recommend it, but for esports especially, this is a great headset. So I believe that's what they made it for. I mean, that kind of makes sense, you know?
Yeah. Styling looks like that. I like the blue cord on it.
Yeah, that's like the Rocket has that on almost all of their audio products, is the blue cabling.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So yeah, if you are serious about gaming, especially competitive gaming, this would be a headset to get just for your games. Anything else I wouldn't use it for. So but yeah, good headset there. And then finally, it's got a really cool portable solid state drive. This is the ADATA SD700. And this is a tiny little true solid-state drive that's external, USB 3 or 3.1, whatever you want to call it. But this is IP68 certified, which means that it is dust-tight, so it's dust-proof, and it can survive in 1.5 meters of water for 60 minutes, so you can get this thing wet. This is great if you're on the go a lot, or you know, your photographer on the go, you need to transfer photos or something like that. This is a great little solid state drive, super fast as well. You know, up to 440 megabytes a second transfer, which is quite fast, especially if you're transferring movies or you're transferring large photo files, raw files, something like that. Really, really fast. It's great to have. I would love to, you know, if I was a action photographer or I was a travel blogger or something like that, this is something I'd want to have, because nobody likes waiting forever for something to transfer.
No.
And
I'm surprised we haven't seen more drives follow the Samsung T3 like footsteps, right, to create drives just like this that are fast, super fast, like kind of professional use. And the rugged thing is really smart, too.
Yeah, I mean, the rugged thing is just great. You know, if this is in my backpack and it starts raining, I don't have to worry about it, right? Yeah, you know, totally. Or if I'm on a boat and I need to transfer files, if this falls in the water, I'm okay. If I'm on the beach, you know, it's dustproof, like, I'm good. You know, and being an SSD, a true SSD, there's no moving parts, so I could throw this against a wall and it's fine. Right. You know, so it's a great little drive. It's available in 256, 512, and 1 terabyte versions. You know, it's awesome. The only thing I didn't like about this one is that it has that USB 3.0 micro B connection instead. I really would have liked the Type C on this to connect to the actual drive. It's just the Type C cabling is less thick and it's just a better cable. And obviously easier to connect as well.
Yeah.
But really, really cool drive. It's going to be in my bag from now on. So whenever I'm out and about, this is going to be the drive that I have with me to transfer stuff, you know, back and forth. So
cool.
So really cool. And yeah. So, and all of our reviews this week have videos. So each review, I did a full video review as well. So guys, definitely check that out on YouTube. Trying to keep up with those. I know we didn't do that last year, so this year I'm trying to keep up. But every review should have a video with it.
Nice.
So you get to see more of me on the camera.
Definitely what we want.
Oh, I know. Everybody wants to see me, so, you know. But yeah, three awesome products this week. Yes. I'm really happy with all of them. And we'll move on to Case Mod Friday, which, again, is one of my favorite sections of the site. It's where each week we feature a builder mod that's been completed in the community. And this week we have a really cool build, pretty much a completely custom build. It's called Project Asus ROG 10th Anniversary. And that makes me feel really old that Asus is celebrating Republic of Gamers 10th Anniversary, because I remember when it first came out, and I'm old. So
yeah, I saw the. Did you see the photo of the first ROG board versus the current one?
I did not.
It's like incredible. Like I kind of like, they've come so far, and like the boards are so, like, everything is so thought out and, you know, covered up and sleek and sexy, right, today.
Yeah.
But like I kind of do miss the, like, the old school boards a little bit, with your big heat sinks on all your bridges and all the connected heat pipes and stuff. I don't know.
I think it's
just nostalgia, but like I was like, you know, there is a place for that look.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, how important, you know, especially PC gaming and just PC building in general, how, you know, having a good-looking motherboard is important, whereas before it wasn't.
The window was like a rarity in a case, for instance.
Yeah, and now how things have changed so much, and like you have to have RGBs on your motherboard now, and you have to do this and you have to do that. You know, it's all selling points and things like that. But yeah, I really do miss it. There's some boards that we reviewed over the years that were just like, I remember them and they were just like amazing. Actually, I probably still have some here.
Yeah.
You know, but this build is really cool. Best describe it as a case cut in half vertically, and pretty much the components, you know, just sitting there. I don't know how else I would explain it. Yeah,
well, it's really, it's kind of like a, like, there's a base, and then there's a back panel, and a little bit of a top panel.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I mean, and then there's the, like, a portion of it extends down in the I.O. It's a reverse mounted board, so you get the I.O. on the right-hand side, and that's about it. But so it really exposes, it's kind of like a cutaway, right?
That's what I was saying, like, if you cut a case vertically in half.
I see what you're saying now. I wasn't thinking at first.
But
the base, it's got a full solid, like the full base is built out though.
Yes.
The pump is hidden in there and the tubing leads down into it. It's a really just sleek design.
Yeah, great color scheme as well. Black and gold. Dark gold too, which I like. It's just a sleek build and it's really unique. I don't think we've seen something quite like this yet. Which is pretty cool.
I could stand to see quite a few more scratch builds, if I'm being honest. I felt like 2016 wound up being a lot of builds in the same few
houses. Yeah, it was, you know? Like the
Inwin. And I was sick of them by the end.
A lot of the S-frame, a lot of the Inwin 909, was it 909? S-frame and the other big one they had, I think it was a 909, I forget what thermal take one. Well, the one they're going to see a lot this year is the new thermal take case, the 900. I think I saw 30 builds at CES with that. But yeah, there's a lot. And then we saw, what was it, the year before, the Parvum cases were really big.
That was like 2015.
Maybe. Yeah, you might be right. I'm thinking way too far back. But yeah, it seems like every year there's like five cases that all of these modders use.
Yeah.
You know, that's just kind of how it works. And which makes sense because they are these sleek, sexy cases. And a lot of the case manufacturers do contact modders to build in this.
Yeah, they're definitely sponsored, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay because these guys need to get paid. You know, we want this to be a job for these guys, right?
Yeah.
Or else we see the level of modding fall right down. But and it's okay to an extent, because I mean, you want to mod something that people want to see, right? You don't want to mod a case that nobody cares about.
Exactly. Well,
variety is the spice of life.
Surprisingly, I've seen some really great mods in some low end cases. You know,
they can be some of the best. Because there's so much that's needed to be done.
Exactly. You know, and we're not, and to turn something that's really plain and turn it into something really great is also good to see. So
I mean, that's basically all we used to do, but like 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And now
everything was basic.
Yeah, and now everything is like, you don't have to do much to make it be great. So
yeah.
So yeah, but this build, I just wanted to point out, was done by L4 Mods. He does some good stuff, so definitely check it out. I do like this one.
It looks like the paint job is amazing.
The paint job's awesome, yes.
Yeah. It's not like it's like a really super incredible unique colors or anything, but it looks like it's a professional like auto body paint.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah. So it's good work.
Yes. So definitely check out that build. And as I always say, we have a ton of builds in there, so you can kind of get some inspiration or just look at mods for a couple hours. Yes. So I will move on to news this week. And so much of the news revolves around AMD and Ryzen this week. So we'll first start out just the other day. All of the Ryzen lineup was released or leaked. Not released. It was actually leaked. So for the longest time, you know, we heard of the Ryzen processor, and we knew there was obviously be more than one, but we didn't know what they were going to be called. We just nobody knew. AMD wasn't really saying anything. People had guesses, but we didn't know if they were going to keep the same naming as their previous CPUs or what it was. But they're going to be changing a lot of things. So first to start out, there's going to be 17 processors at launch, which is a lot. And the way they're going to designate them is R7 is higher end, and then it's going to go R5 and then R3.
Dang, that sounds so familiar. Where have I heard a naming scheme like that before, Bob?
Yeah, exactly. So
it's smart, though, because you go with what people are used to.
Yes.
And it gives you an easy comparison between, like, if you're looking at an i7, a core i7 part, you can go, well, a comparative part would be an R7 part.
Exactly.
I can't hate on them too much, but
yes.
It's funny.
So to the flagship part will be the R7-1800X, and that will be an 8-core, 16-thread. One thing we're not sure of is the actual official speeds. Okay. We know the range, so the range will be from 3 gigahertz to 3.6 gigahertz for the base. Likely 3.6 gigahertz for this 1800X, but in the base should be 3.4? The boost, I don't know what the boost will be, but the base should be between 3.4 and 3.6. And then it will move down to the R7 1800 Pro or R17 Pro 800, and we don't know what Pro means.
Yeah, we don't know, actually, from this graph, we don't know a whole lot about any of the differences between them.
Yeah.
For the most part.
But, the Pro designation, we're not sure what that means. With Pro on AMD's APUs, it meant, like, certain business features. Sort of like Intel's vPro processors. You get certain things for enterprise and things like that. But we have no clue what that means.
Changes in architecture, maybe?
Yeah, or just other features, security features. Like, we don't know. And then it goes down to the 1700, and then you have a 1700X, a 1700, and a 1700 Pro. And then we move down to the R5 series, and the R5 series starts out with the 1600X, and that is a 6-core processor. So earlier this week, we talked about how there might be a 6-core, there might not be a 6-core. There will indeed be a 6-core processor. So this is a 6-core, 12-thread processor. Cool. And all of the R5s will be between, at a base clock, between 3.2 and 3.5 gigahertz. So again, we don't know.
Yeah.
And then finally, we move down to, and the R5s have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight processors in there, and then we move down to the
half of them are 6-core. No. Yeah. No, is there 9 then? No, there's 8. Yeah, half of them are 6-core, and half of them are 4-core.
Yeah, half of them are 6-core, half of them are 4-core. And the big
same
difference. Yeah, the big difference is that I'm trying to think what the big yes yeah 4-core or 4-core 8-thread 6-core 12-thread.
The big difference is the core count.
Yeah. And then moving down, we have the R3. These are the entry level chips, and that's going to be the R3 1200X, the R3 1200 Pro, R3 1100, and R3 1100 Pro. No hyper threading, and they're all 4-core 4-thread.
So I'm a little surprised that the base clock drops for those, because I figured you could actually run a higher base clock with less resources required.
That does make sense, but I don't know. So that's a hefty lineup. 17 processors, all covers high end to entry level, which is good to see. All based on the Zen microarchitecture, which is, again, good thing to see. Completely new processor. I think not only does this show that we'll have high-end desktop parts, but we will have lower-end stuff, for all-in-ones, for entry-level PCs. I mean, we will see AMD processors in all different types of products, which is cool to see.
Definitely.
Obviously.
So we just consider all of the 8 cores to be similar to Intel's, what do you call that?
No, because if you look, well, at least it, based on this graph that we have here, you know, it shows the R7 1700 to the 7700K.
And the, but then it's got the 6900K, which is a...
Yeah, that's a 10-core processor. So I don't... Again, the biggest thing is that we have to see how these perform in real-world tests, not AMD tests, you know, once
to see where they all stack.
To see where they all stack. And like, what's the difference between 1800X and the 1800 Pro? What does that mean?
Yeah, the you would think, well, the X means that they overclock, right? But no, it doesn't, because AMD's already said that they all overclock. They're all overclocked, right?
Yeah, so we don't know. And again, I think that's still kind of cool that we don't know everything about these, because it leaves a little bit of mystery, and obviously it lets us talk about it for longer.
Yeah. If...
you know?
The same stuff every week.
Yeah, so that's kind of part of it. But yeah, it's 17 parts. I was actually surprised when this story broke. So,
Was this graph the leaked part, or was this built by somebody else?
This graph was built by...
I'm sorry, it's not really a graph, it's a chart.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Because if it's AMD's chart, like, the 6900K is not, like, two steps away from a 7700K. It's many steps away, right?
Yeah, but if that was a somebody... direct comparison
to their parts, they're saying that it's two steps, like, yeah, that's not, like... yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I think somebody made this.
To me, I would think the 7700K would be on par with the 1600X, just based on what we see here, right?
Yeah.
But we don't know. That's just looking at the part lineup, like, that's just what I would guess.
Yeah. So I don't think that this... I think somebody made this, and that's just kind of where they plugged in things.
Yeah.
Because obviously AMD has been directly comparing whatever Ryzen chip it is, because we don't know... to the high-end Intel chip, right?
Right.
And all
their
the
highest part, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, I think until we see tests on an R7 and R5 and an R3 against a high-end desktop, and then, you know, a Core i7, a Core i5, and a Core i3, we're not going to know the major. You know, we're not going to know where they stand.
Right.
So I think these are supposed to come out March 2nd. So around that time, we should see, and obviously leading up to this time, so it's about a month away, we'll see a ton of leaks. I think, you know, this list, a lot of the news this week was Ryzen, and I think we'll see that up until the launch. So
yeah,
I almost
believe that, like, these companies, AMD, Intel, Nvidia, you name it, they actually leak this stuff on purpose.
Oh yeah,
because it builds so much hype.
Oh yeah, I mean I've known of some leaks that were leaked on purpose.
Yeah.
So, talking about that, there was a Ryzen leak this week when it comes to performance, which was the Ashes of Singularity, and this is a CPU frame rate test, which is actually a great CPU test if you haven't run it, and you actually have the game. It's a good, great way to test how powerful your CPU is. With this, we don't have anything to compare, which kind of sucks, but one thing that's really interesting is about this is that the name of the CPU... all of the other leaks that we've seen had an ES prefix on the processor name. This one has a ZD, which ES is engineering sample.
Right.
I don't know what ZD stands for, but it shows you that it's not an ES. Also, we see F4 on the end, which means that's the revision of the silicon. And usually F4 is the one that we get. And then finally, at the end, we have two numbers, which are 40 and 36. And that stands for the turbo and clock speed. So 4.0 gigahertz and 3.6 gigahertz. So
boosting to 4?
Yes, so from 3.6. So I would think this is the highest end. So that would be the 1800X.
Yeah, 3.6 is a pretty legit base clock.
Yeah, and then you'll boost up to 4.0. And
overclock much further.
Sure. It scored quite well in this test. If you've run this test before...
I've not.
It's pretty good if you've run this before on anything. And what's really interesting about this is the graphics card that's in there is an Nvidia card. So we think this doesn't come from somebody at AMD.
Okay.
Because they would probably have an AMD part in there. This makes sense.
They're a fanboy though.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, that's their
name. Their name is AMD_Family.
Yeah, so, so it's just interesting to see this come out, and it's interesting to see that this is a non-engineering sample, which means we do have the date now, but when this story came out, we didn't have the date just yet. So that means that, you know, we're going to get these very soon, which is fun. Talking about that, and we talked about Republic of Gamers with that build this week. Asus has detailed their upcoming Republic of Gamers Crosshair 6 motherboard. And it is, and this is an AM4 motherboard made for yeah. Ryzen. And I would say, out of all the Ryzen boards, this is the one that I would want.
It's the one that catches your eye.
It looks like an Intel board. And I'm not trying to say
well,
that just
I, saying, I would say that what you mean to say is not that it looks like an Intel board, is that it looks like a modern board.
It looks like a modern board. Even a lot of the AM4 Ryzen boards are kind of just
that old school look.
Not that old school look. I mean, there's just not the feature set on the boards is just not enough, so there's not enough just like stuff on the board. And this one's fully decked out. And what's interesting about this is that if you didn't know, Crosshair was the first Republic of Gamers thing. There was a AM2 motherboard that came out 10 years ago, almost, and it was the board to get when you had that Enforce based motherboard, AM2 motherboard. It was just the one to have. And it's kind of cool that they're bringing back Crosshair with this, and it looks awesome. Nostalgia. Yeah, fully featured, has everything that you would want on a motherboard. I mean, it's awesome. Has their new Supreme FX sound on there, which is supposed to be really, really great as well. So, nice. So yeah, a lot of cool stuff on this board.
Is it professional level though? Would you say this is like high end desktop level, workstation type?
Or no.
Would you still categorize this in just high-end gaming?
It would be high-end gaming. So, at least in the past, Crosshair has been the... It's not a Maximus, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it would be, like, Maximus, then maybe, like, Crosshair. You know, like, their Hero on the Intel side? Like, this sits where the Hero kind of sits.
Gotcha.
Or this is the Hero, I'm sorry. But, yes. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, so this... It kind of sits right there. It sits below Maximus, so it's not super high end. But for people waiting for Ryzen, this would be the board that I would definitely consider. It's the best one that I've seen. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Do you think we'll see? I mean, this might be telling about what AMD plans to support for GPU. Do you think we'll see one with 4 PCI Express slots? They not intend to support 4-way Crossfire.
Not 4-way. I don't believe so. No. I think if
so
you
4-way is dead.
I just think the way the market is now. Yeah. I mean, we even see that on the Intel side. Unless,
that's what I mean. Like, can we call 4-way SLI pretty much dead at this point?
I mean, you can do it if you you can do it on X99 for sure because you have the available. And then there are Z270 motherboards that have the PLX chip that allow you to do it as well. I actually have one of those boards here.
But the new NVIDIA cards can't be run in 4-way.
Yeah, so that kind of limits what you
can
do.
So, I guess what I'm saying is, do you think that, like, we won't see AMD cards come out that support it either?
Possibly.
It's just going to be phased out now. Like, it's
I just
2-way
don't
SLI
think...
is the most we see.
One, I think, for both AMD and NVIDIA, it's a lot of extra work as far as drivers and support and software.
Oh, of course.
It's just way too much work for the amount of people that actually will use it, right?
Yeah.
And for a lot of games these days, if you're gaming, even if you're gaming in 4K, if you have two 1080s, you should be pretty good.
Yeah.
So adding a third or fourth isn't really worth it. The scaling wise, I don't think.
Oh, it's never scaled well.
Yeah, so I think that while it is cool, obviously it's great to see a build with 4 graphics cards and all that kind of stuff, it's really not worth it. And the only application where you're gonna see multiple cards or all those lanes being filled up is like a workstation where you're using those cards not to play games but to encode or something along those lines.
Yeah.
I think that we're at the point now where, you know, most motherboards these days will support two-way, and that's basically it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the motherboards are just reacting to the graphics cards, essentially, right?
Yes.
Because they'll make a board that will do whatever, but if nobody's releasing graphics cards that can do more than 2-way SLI, they're not going
to
make boards.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what when Vega comes out, you know, what that all supports, right? And I believe if we've known anything from AMD is that it's not going to, you know, you'll be able to do it through the actual lane. You won't have to have the connector, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
But,
Just thought I would ask.
No, yeah. It's a totally good question because, again, we're not seeing that as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially with NVIDIA basically making it impossible to do, and especially on their single cards, making this so you can't double, like, the 1060.
Yeah.
You can't connect anything to it.
There's no fingers on it at all.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, they're kind of hammering down on that, so. So, yeah.
Kind of takes away from the expandability and the modularness of the PC in a way, which is a little disappointing. But
it does, for sure. And I think a lot of people were kind of pissed at that 1060 thing. But if I'm NVIDIA, if I have two 1060s, which I don't know what that would equal. But
probably a 1080. It always has.
Yeah, so, you know, and I can get those two 1060s maybe for cheaper.
Eventually, yeah.
You know,
but that's always been the thing. Like, you game on those on that one card until it's the games are too hard for it, you know, and then you can go out and you can buy another one for, you know, a bit less. And your system is still good, but
yeah,
it's kind of a forced upgrade process, which is, you know, that's financially it's good for them, it's good for the whole market, I suppose, but not that great for the consumer necessarily.
No, and I think
not everybody wants to run out and buy the newest 1080, you know, when it comes out.
So. And I think the upgrade cycle has increased a little bit.
I think so.
So they want people to buy the new card rather than buy, you know.
Yeah.
Another one of the card they bought a year ago.
It kind of goes. It's kind of like I feel like it's a theme that as consumers is being pushed on us more and more in general. Like, buy new things, right?
Yeah.
Don't use your old things as long as you can. Buy new things. So I don't know, good, bad. It's hard to say, but it's an interesting scheme that's going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're definitely making it so you can't. So,
yeah.
So, they're not giving us much of a choice there. So, yeah. So yeah. But talking about old things.
Want to talk about Ryzen again?
Yeah, we'll talk about Ryzen again. Is that they provided Microsoft with platform drivers for Ryzen chipset, an AM4 chipset, for Windows 7, which is really interesting. I'm not using Windows 7. I think you have a PC there that's running Windows 7 or not. Okay, you did. You did up until a little while ago.
I've probably been on 10 completely for a year now.
Okay.
It just I was on it forever. We can say that.
The big thing about this story, this wouldn't be any real news, but you know, Intel did not provide Windows 7 drivers for Z270.
Yeah.
So if for some reason you wanted to run Windows 7 on a Z270 system with Kaby Lake, you could not.
Which is silly to me.
Yeah, I think it's still, I mean, you can make the driver and it will work. I just don't understand why you wouldn't. You know, but I think it's a big thing. I mean, they have a partnership with Microsoft through a lot of products, and obviously they've worked together for so many times. Microsoft probably was like, hey, don't do it. Because Microsoft wants everybody on Windows 10 to unify, say, one operating system. As we know, Windows is going to become a service. It's not going to become, you know, it's not going to become an operating system. It's just going to be Windows, and it's just going to constantly update. It's not going to be something you buy.
We don't get a Windows 11.
Yeah. So at least that's the plan going forward. So for them to, you know, say, hey, Intel, can you not provide drivers because we want more people on this? Here's some money, or however it went down.
Hey, you know that's how it went down.
Yeah, so, you know, but, you know, if AMD, it just, you know, they probably weren't approached by Microsoft in that way, I wouldn't think.
I think this is a phenomenal marketing move.
Yeah, and it's a great marketing thing for AMD saying, hey, we're backward supporting as far as Windows 7, which is great.
I don't know why. Maybe I'm not operating system compatibility as I should, but like, couldn't you run like XP and older systems on just about anything up until Kaby Lake decided not to support 7. Like,
I believe so, yes.
There was never like a, oh, I can't run XP or Vista or whatever because it's not, you know, I run this I never checked a processor to see if it was, you know, supported by my operating system.
Yeah, well, I think again, the big thing is it's all pushed by Microsoft to get everybody on Windows 10.
It seems, yeah, it's stupid.
Yeah, that happens. It seems backwards to me. Yeah, so that is...
Microsoft sucks.
Yeah. So that's our last Ryzen story of the day.
Oh.
So we'll move on to Vega.
Sure, promise?
Surprisingly. still more AMD news. It looks like the AMD Vega 10 GPU, which we've been talking about for a while, the official name of it has been leaked by Bethesda, of all people. Bethesda released a new high-resolution texture pack for PC. And on the little thing they sent out, they had recommended PC specs. And interesting, they have a GTX 1080, 8GB, and they have an AMD RX 490, 8GB, which is weird. I don't know how you'd mess it up. I don't think that was a 480 you'd put in there, you know? So it was interesting.
Yeah, I think this is what they meant to put in there because, well, 1080 is not equal to a 480, so.
Yeah. And what's also interesting is around the same time, SK Hynix, which is the maker of HBM2, they released the new HBM2 specification document, which confirms specifications and availability of 4GB HBM2 stacks for Q1, which means that, one, it would make sense for them to have a name by now, because mm-hmm. this should be coming out closer towards the end of Q1. Into Q2 for the Vega GPU, and the RX 490 will have 2 4GB HBM2 stacks, so 8GB in total, which makes sense with the 8GB name up top. So you will get your HBM2, Derek.
Love that HBM2.
Yes, Derek's been wanting HBM2 for like the past 2 years on everything. So yeah. That's going to be interesting. We did get to see Vega at CES, and it played pretty well.
Played pretty good.
Yes. So,
did you read the like requirements for this? This is pretty crazy. It's mm-hmm. not really a part of the article, but they want 58 gigs just for the texture pack. That's where we're at right now.
And, oh yeah.
Yeah, like PC gaming is incredible to me.
That is a high resolution texture pack. If you
that is a
used
lot
one.
Of information. Yeah.
And they want a 5820K, which is not
or
a
better.
Slow, yeah, no, it's not a slow processor at all to run this. So yeah,
this isn't even max specs. This is recommended. This is middle.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, Fallout 4, great game. It
PC
has
Master
to look,
Race right here. This
it
is
has
what it's
to
all
look
about.
Amazing with the HD texture pack. And if you're running the HD texture pack at like 4K, that's gonna look sick.
Yeah.
So yeah. So we know the name. So 490.
Right. Yep.
Not surprising.
We kind of assumed.
Yes. We have two liquid cooling releases that you might be interested in, Derek, because that's your thing. We saw these at CES. EVGA announced their closed liquid cooling 120 and 280 millimeter liquid coolers. And these are ones that are completely closed loop. We did see the ones that you can add to.
We saw these two though.
Yeah, but these ones are completely closed loop, and these are pretty exciting. Built in conjunction with Asetek, which pretty much all of them are these days.
Yeah, I think Asetek's really pushing some product because we're seeing a lot of manufacturers coming out with AIOs.
Yeah, and this is it looks to be a nice AIO. I would say the only thing for me is that the radiator looks a little thin.
Indeed. For EVGA, they're kind of like. I kind of think of them as a really performance brand, right? Or they at least try to be.
Yeah.
The all high end. So, yeah, you might have expected some thicker radiators. And to be honest, they look to me like they're just very standard coolers at this point with
now,
some EVGA touches.
Yeah, and the tubing doesn't look that thick.
It's okay. It's not the worst, but it looks like it's about standard now, I think.
Yeah, and
it's
I do like
sleeve,
the block.
Which is nice. There's nothing that's not nice about it. They look nice, but It's all, I think, just standard equipment with EVGA styling.
The only thing I don't like about this is that the software says coming soon, and I've seen that so many times. Oh. And then it's like 2 years before it's actually done.
Yeah.
So I don't. That's nothing against EVGA. It could be out already. I haven't really looked, but I don't believe it's out. But we've seen this with companies in the past where they show us the software. I'm trying to think recently. Maybe it was the RX 480s came out, or might have even been whatever graphics card came out, and they're like, oh, you'll be able to do this in the software. Mm. I believe it was Sapphire Trick software. You'll be able to change things on the RX 480, and then like I got it to review, and they're like, oh, it'll be a week, and then it wasn't a week. Oh, it will be next month. It like they took them forever to finish the software, and it just limits what you can do, right? The software here is flow control.
It changes the product when you have it for an AIO.
Yeah, so with this allows you to change the flow control and the speed of the pump and the fans, as well as the color on the RGB lights on the block.
Yeah.
If I don't have that, it kind of limits what I could do, especially if I'm playing a game, I want to up my pump speed and all that, because I don't care how loud it is because I have headphones on, and obviously I want the best performance. And then when I'm sleeping, I want to be able to turn it down. And I won't be able to do that without working software.
I think software package with your AIO is just a must now.
Yeah, right? It's kind of, if you don't have it, you're kind of just left out there.
It's just something you got to include.
Yeah, so, but these look good. I would definitely, we'll try to get some into review so Derek can tell you what he thinks about them, because they're pretty good looking. And then the second one is a water block, which I actually got to see in person at CES. This is the Thermaltake Pacific W4, and it is a nice looking water block. I can't tell you about performance because I don't know. It just came out, but it's interesting because it's circular, and that's not something we typically see when it comes to water blocks. At least the top is circular.
I like it.
And it looked really great. They had some builds with it at the Thermaltake suite. It's completely RGB, so you have RGB lights in there, and I believe that all could be controlled. So, you know, you can set it to do what you want. And if it is RGB, you might be able to connect it to an RGB header in your motherboard, so then you can match everything, which is also really cool.
Just looking at the photo of the channels and the microfins, it looks like it'd probably be pretty high performance as well.
Yeah, so good stuff there. And actually, I was, you know, again, I'm not, Derek knows more about water cooling than me, but everything from the Pacific line from Thermaltake has looked actually pretty good for water cooling components. So
yeah, decent performance.
So really cool looking block, and I like that it's circular. And we talked about it, or we've been writing about it, is the DRAM shortage, or the NAND shortage in general, has been a big deal this year. SSD prices have gone up, and they haven't stabilized yet, and we're going to see it with memory as well. So if you're looking to buy memory, you should have bought it a while ago.
which, like, DDR4 was never really cheap. So.
Yeah, I mean, but now, so a 32 gigabyte DDR4 kit was selling for around $90 in the summer, and now it's $170.
You think this is like the flooding that drove the market on hard disk drives up? Do you remember that? That was a couple years ago, probably, but like it completely elevated the prices, and then it turned out, oh, that didn't affect the manufacturing at all. It was just a good excuse to crank the prices up.
I don't think this is, because I really do think the shortage does exist.
Okay.
Because we're seeing a lot of things happen. One, we're seeing that everybody has a smartphone now, and just everybody's upgrading every year, and every time a big smartphone comes out, it beats the last, you know, the iPhone 7 beats the iPhone 6 sales, blah, 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 or, you know, we see so much of that. So the demand in every one of these products uses NAND.
So you think we're just consuming too much NAND?
And so many products have NAND, right? So, you know, we're coming to that point now where we're completely moving away from traditional hard drives and going to completely SSDs. And they're becoming less expensive. Well, no,
they were,
you know, less expensive, so more people have them. You know, every Ultrabook comes with a PCI Express solid state drive now, which has NAND on it. All these, you know, smart TVs have NAND, like everything has NAND, and there's just the demand is so high now that they're just not producing enough.
I'll tell you what, if you had the money, and it might be too late right now, but if you realized this like a year ago, build yourself a foundry and make NAND.
Mm-hmm.
Smart move.
Yeah.
You want to start one, Bob?
Yeah.
There's got to be property in the Pittsburgh area. Yeah. Start a foundry.
But you're not gonna. Our labor costs will be way too high compared to where this stuff is made.
We'll do it with robots.
Yeah. but yeah. So you know, it's not supposed to. They say maybe mid-year we'll see it kind of get back to normal, or at least. Okay. It won't.
Well, it'll stabilize. It'll stop rising.
Yeah, it will stabilize.
I bet they stay where they're at for a good little while.
Yeah. So if you're looking to upgrade, I would just hold off just for a little bit.
It sucks, actually.
I don't think this will affect prices of consumer devices. So if you're buying a phone or something like that,
no.
This very well, it's going to affect DRAM and it's going to affect SSD prices, I believe.
It'll probably affect the direct purchase of NAND, right? Which is like RAM and solid state drive. Probably flash drives, micro SD, everything like that. You're probably going to see have a price bump. Maybe it'll be latent, but it'll probably come up. It might not be right away, but seems like the things that are like directly like the NAND is RAM, right? That's pretty much the whole product. Those are the things that you see an immediate price change in.
I mean, that's a pretty big thing. I mean, going from $90 to $170 for the same kit is...
That's what, a 190% increase? It's almost two times.
Yeah, two times, yeah. So, yeah, interesting. So, yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, it really does suck, yeah.
Yeah, talking about something else that sucks.
Or PC kind of, Master Race.
kind of a sad story is Mad Catz, who at least for me, they're famously known for their rat mice, are in danger of being dropped from the New York Stock Exchange. On January 20th, they were sent formal notice from the New York Stock Exchange that they need to consolidate their shares or raise the share price over the next 6 months. So if you didn't know, back in 2015, the company announced that they would co-publish Rock Band with Harmonix. Everybody knows Rock Band. And then they notified investors after that their dependence on the sales from Rock Band raised substantial doubts about the company's ability to continue as a going concern. And then in 2016, the CEO resigned, which is a huge red flag. And he resigned right ahead of the annual earnings reports. And then
good signal to sell your stock.
Yeah, the next day, the company announced it would lay off 37% of its staff. And they sold SciTech, which made one of the best keyboards ever. This was probably 10 years ago. They sold that brand to Logitech. And Mad Catz is currently trading on the New York Stock Exchange for 15 cents a share.
Ouch.
So what the company is planning to doing is doing a reverse stock split, which will reduce the numbers of shares that are out there. For me, I loved the rat mice. Just the design quality and how they worked, and they were so modular, and I really liked them. I think at least on the PC side of things, because Mad Catz have made stuff for consoles and stuff, but at least on the PC side, their marketing just wasn't good. And you know, everybody, I had a rat mouse for, and everybody's like, oh my god, you use that, it's comfortable. I'm like, yeah, it's the most comfortable mouse I ever used. But nobody knew that because their marketing wasn't good enough. They just didn't put it out there, and
they had a huge reputation for poor quality. Whether that was true or not, that was all I knew about them, was that if you bought a Rat 9, it was going to die on you.
That's what I had heard too. I didn't experience that problem with my rat mice, but I think that was a big thing. And not only with the rat mice, but with their controllers for consoles and things like that, they had that problem as well. And the quality thing, I've heard that from so many people.
They made a lot of junk products for console, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I think the two is when... That, you know, when PC gaming, and every time a new console came out, they put out these products that weren't that great.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Like poor buttons would die quickly, stuff like that. You just knew, like, you just knew not to buy their console peripherals because they were going to probably fail on you. The mice looked interesting, but they had that reputation as well.
Yeah, they had that reputation. That's a hard
thing to get away from.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the mice that I had, I liked, and I thought they were really great. And they didn't have those issues with dying or anything like that. You know, but I just think it was just a downhill thing, and I don't think that they did enough to really... to really rectify it. And it's really hard to rectify bad quality if you continue to still make it from the same manufacturer or whatever. You know.
So yeah, changing your reputation is difficult, but you can. You have to really invest in your grassroots type things, I feel. Like really get in there on the ground floor with your products.
Or
like,
just make
put them in the hands of people that are going to make them seen.
Yeah, or you just make another brand. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Logitech did that as well. Logitech had a hard time selling speakers, portable speakers. They had their own Logitech, and now there's a company called UE, which makes the UE Boom, which is one of the most popular portable speakers, and that's owned by Logitech.
I have a UE one, and it works really well.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. I mean, that. But I know, I think, you know, I don't think Mad Catz is going to come back from this. They're just so far gone.
I think you're probably right.
And there's not a concerned effort. Say, if I was Mad Catz, I would completely separate PC. I would completely separate PC and console gaming brands to two different things. Mm-hmm. And I would do a lot of marketing on both sides and get out there and, you know, there's just so much to do, but I just think it's too far gone right now.
I have a feeling that there's not a high enough morale in the company for them to like make that the push that they need to make, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that sucks for Mad Catz.
Yeah, it sucks for them.
And then finally, we have our first virtual reality lawsuit. Which is interesting.
This is a pretty big lawsuit too.
And it's a settlement, so the lawsuit had already happened. Is that ZeniMax, which is a company that I had never heard of.
No.
But they
There's always just companies you never hear of that own everything though.
But they actually own ID Software. ID Software is of course the game studio led by John Carmack, which we all know who he is. And because ZeniMax owned ID Software, and the Oculus Rift was partly developed by John Carmack when he was working at ID Software, that means that ZeniMax owns that intellectual property. And then Carmack left ZeniMax to work for Oculus in 2013. Obviously, the two big headsets...
Yeah, he doesn't own what he worked on.
Yeah. So the two big headsets are the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive. And so a jury in Texas found that Oculus was in violation of the VR patents that were held by ZeniMax. And the settlement's $500 million. That's I wouldn't say that that's a ton considering Oculus was acquired by Facebook for $2 billion. But again, we don't know what the patents were or how much influence John Carmack had. Like, we don't know those details.
I think it's significant though if you consider it in light that the jury decided that it was actually what a quarter of the worth that Oculus was sold for.
That's true.
So yeah, like that's a pretty substantial amount of property of intellectual property.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean,
Facebook isn't gonna flinch at the $500 million, but like, if you consider in the grand scheme of the value of Oculus and for what it was purchased for, it's a pretty good amount.
Yeah, that's a lot. I was actually surprised at how much. Yeah. And I had no clue about any of this, which is really interesting as well. You know.
Well.
Yeah, so so yeah, $500 million, that's not a bad little payday for them at all. So that wraps up our news for this week. I know it was a lot of Ryzen, but that's just kind of what's going on in the tech scene right now, especially for us. So we're really excited for that coming
it's good, up. It's a good product, and so there is good reason to be excited for it.
Yeah, and I think, again, a lot of people are waiting for this and have been since it's really been talked about. So it's coming. Should be this time in a month, so we should see some stuff. So definitely stay tuned for that. Talking about what's coming up this upcoming week, I have the Inwin 805 Infinity. This is a case that we first saw at CES 2016. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
2016. So it's the 805, but it has the Infinity mirror in the front. And I just did the build this weekend, and it is awesome. Nice. That Infinity mirror, you can just like stare at it. Like it's awesome. So definitely stay tuned for that. And then also be taking a look at the Tesoro Tuned In-Ear Pro headphones. These are kind of all-around headphones, very low cost. You actually have a pair. They gave you a pair at CES. Yeah. And I have a pair as well. So I've been using those pretty much since I got back as kind of like my daily headphones, and I really like them.
Really?
Yeah, they're nice headphones. They don't get tangled, which I like. And you know, they're very good value for they're $34.95. They're not expensive. Yeah,
super high value.
Yeah. So I'll have those two things. Maybe some other stuff depends on what I get done this week. And that is it. We always talk about if we did anything cool or fun. I haven't.
Aww.
just been working, man. It's been trying to get stuff done. So
sweet.
What about you?
Gotta get the hustle on. I watched a movie way late. It's been out. There was one showing left by the time I saw it, but Arrival.
I saw your thing on Facebook about that. So
dude, it's.
I saw the previews. I was gonna watch it, but I didn't. So
it's totally not what I thought it was gonna be. And surprised me like crazy. And it's just incredible.
That's going to help
it. People will have trouble probably maybe seeing it still in theater, but watch it when it comes out on video. It's been nominated for several Oscars already, so I hope it wins everything. It's phenomenal.
I will have to check it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know what I did watch is, was it Doctor Strange?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
I did like that. It's one of the better, like, I don't watch a ton of movies, but a lot of the movies I watch, they're just kind of mundane, and they're just not, I don't know, they're not that great. Yeah. I would say
all of the Marvel movies are just phoned in now.
But no, Doctor Strange I really liked. I thought it was good. I mean obviously I like that, like, time of action. Like, I had no clue about the story, really. So it was good. I liked it.
That's what I mean, like the rest of them feel phoned in, and but the Doctor Strange movie felt like that's legit.
Cool. It was good, so I like that. So yeah, guys, that is it. As always, we will have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about. So as we go through the podcast, you can click through and read all the stories as well. And in all of your podcasting, we actually shout out to Derek because he let me know that our XML feed was completely messed up. None of our podcasts were showing, and we completely updated everything. So all of our podcasts are actually listed now on all of your podcasting software. Yeah, which is obviously good, and it's actually updated, so we are still doing the podcast. So if you go to any of your podcasting software, iTunes, whatever, just search Think Computers, all one word, and we'll show up. So until next week, catch you guys later.